Welcome back from the weekend. Of course, you couldn't escape Adele.
I loved Adele. Mind you, I didn't go, but I loved the fact that everyone else went and I shared it on their Facebook feeds.
You must have been able to hear that anyway. I can't believe my neighbour said at Newmarket we could hear it last night.
Yeah, because you're up on a hill, though, and the wind must have been going your way.
Yeah, it's only 5 k's direct, I suppose.
And we heard some people who loved and didn't love the Adele concert also had the fun of Mummy's Boys, Brisbane's biggest Mummy's Boys. There were some shocking stories of men in their 40s and 50s still getting their beds made and clothes washed
They're
for them.
They're not great. Can we just say out loud, this is not something to aspire to ever. And if you are one, then change it.
Oh, you're pretty happy though, God.
And Gordy Tallis stopped by to give us his legends and lemons from the weekend in the NRL.
Marto, Ed and Robin, lifting podcasting to new heights. Well, they're giving it a crack. Might need a hand from Height for Hire's reliable fleet of booms and scissor lifts. 1-800-heightforhire.com.au.
Marto, to repeat what you just said off air, what have you got in your house?
I just looked at my watch and went, the boys would have been out the house by now. I've got a young bloke, one of Harry's mates. He's living at our house now. He's starting Archie's name. Is he starting his apprenticeship this morning?
A Sparky.
So they both have their lunchboxes, their big 5-litre water bottles and out the door. They would have already gone. Very proud of them. To have my young bloke's working as a landscaper.
Okay. Now, the reason I bring this up is because I want to talk about Mummy's Boys. Oh. Yes, Robin, you are the mother of three boys. You're a single mother. I was raised by a single mother, so it was fair to probably level that at me for a long time that I was a bit of a mummy's boys. And I'm sure that your boys, due to the closeness that you guys have, are mummy's boys.
What does that mean, though, in your definition?
It means that they are more than happy to be somewhat over-mothered by their mum.
Their mother won't let go of them either.
That's the other one.
They're just clinging and spoiling the hell out of them, which is boys are just taking advantage, as natural as a human.
Okay, have you got an example of this? The jury's still out in my head about my sons. Go ahead.
You won't know that you're doing it.
No, I don't want to do it, though. I'm very keen. Well, so many mothers of particularly only sons who won't let go of their kids.
Now, that's a great way of putting it because my brother-in-law, who is 18 years old, my mother-in-law, Madame, who is wonderful, now he's just started university, right? He's gone straight from school to uni, and I saw them in the last week, and I said, "Hey, how are you going, guys? Hey, mate, are you excited about going to uni?"
"Yeah."
And then as we're standing there, my mother-in-law walks in and says, "Here you go, Leighton. Here you are." And she handed him what she described as a male change purse.
Ooh. A what? A man bag?
No. Because I said that. Nice man bag. And she said, "It's not that. It's a male change purse."
What do you put in there?
And it was a little purse. Yeah. And it was full of change so that he could put it in the into the parking meters near university.
Yeah.
Right. And then I started laughing and hopping around talking about his male change purse, right?
She sort of hid
her other hand. And I was like, "What do you got there?" And she's like, "Nothing." And I said, "Go on. We've already got the change purse. Let's do the whole bit." And she pulled up a packed lunch for him to take to university.
See, I'm really divided on this. I'm very conflicted.
I'm happy with people to make lunches while the kids are at school, but that's the end of it then. It's got to be finished then. Yeah.
And it is her youngest child, isn't it?
Yeah.
So this is about her not being willing to let go of her whole mothering stuff. Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah. So that's what you call your mummy's boy. If you're rocking up to uni with a male change purse.
The change purse I can't justify. The lunch, okay. I kind of think, is it his first year of uni for the first time?
He's 18, Robin.
Okay, so maybe she's just getting him into the whole process because she's been used to making lunches and she's going to, you know,
every man for themselves. As soon as you finish school.
I don't know. I'm trying.
I don't mind if you leave dinner in the oven, like with some alfoil on it, if they're getting home late.
Well, that's if you're making dinner for everyone.
Yeah, that's right.
I'm not up for having, you know, a specific meal made for someone who's not there necessarily. Ooh, what do you want to know, Ed? Do you want to know about mummy's boys, do you?
Yeah, who's dealing with a mummy's boy in their life? Mm. Maybe you're the father in this world and your wife just won't stop mothering that grown child of yours. Maybe you've got a mate that's a mummy's boy.
What about making their beds? Does she make his bed?
Oh, yeah.
What?
fluffing his pillows?
Have you got a mummy's boy in your life?
Here's my question, right? At what point, because he must be happy to be that.
Of course he is.
Yeah.
So will he be happy at 27?
I'd be a mummy's boy if anyone gave me the chance.
Really?
We all would. God, somebody's
still
making
now.
Your bed. If someone wanted to make my bed, I'd still be living at home if Mum did that.
What?
And that would be the problem. Layton will be there until he's 43.
Of, like, isn't there some sort of glory in actually standing on your own 2 feet? And doesn't that kick in at some
God,
point?
God, no.
Somebody's
prepared
God.
To make your food and your bed and do your washing and everything. You let it happen.
So your mum kicked you out and you had to stand on your own 2 feet?
18.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Josh of Redland Bay. Are you a mummy's boy?
Yes, I am, actually.
It's so easy to become one, Josh. It's no bad thing. It's more your mum's fault, isn't it?
What?
Well, I've always been one. I haven't just become one because I'm the eldest of three boys.
Oh, you're the eldest.
Ah, the eldest.
The eldest of three boys.
Oh.
My mum was, my mum was a single mother raising three boys, just like you, Robin.
Okay. Oh.
Yep. Right. And
But you should have get going and let her deal with the other two below you.
I did. I tried. But she wouldn't let me go.
Okay, no. Okay, explain what this actually means. So you're still living at home? Is that what you're telling me?
I'm living with my grandfather at the moment, but when I got my first real girlfriend, she freaked out. She's like, oh, my God, I'm losing my baby.
Yeah,
she just absolutely freaked out.
What are the other two, chopped liver? Like, what happens to your brother?
Yeah, they're not as good as Josh.
Did your mother
boy.
Have a meeting with the girlfriend and say you're not allowed to cook or do any of the mother stuff?
No, well, my ex-girlfriend didn't cook anyway, but anyway.
Yeah, and she didn't last, mate. That's the problem because you're already... Yeah, exactly.
So
that's
where
the key
are we at
word.
Now, Josh? Like, are you still mummy's number one hero?
Oh, my brothers definitely think I'm the favourite.
Yeah, that's right. Because you are, Josh.
But obviously, no, I'm not actually. My baby brother is the favourite.
Is he still at home? Anyone still at home?
Yeah. My second brother and my baby brother are still at home living with Mum.
Would Mum be making lunch for them today?
Possibly.
That's a yes. Thank you, Josh. That's a yes.
That's a definite yes.
Be happy. Look how happy Josh was.
Exactly.
Mummy's boys are very happy. Here we go.
That's so true.
Mandy. Of Karina.
Hey guys, how are you?
What do you know about mummy's boys?
Well, Robin, I'm a single mum as well of two boys. My oldest is 20, my youngest is 15. And I guess, you know, you kind of fall into that trap because you only want the best for your boys. So the first time when I was accused of being a mummy's boy, I was like, no, I'm not. I'm just doing the best I can. Now, both my boys are cricketers. And, you know, I'm always the mum who's there, you know, scoring the matches, supporting the boys and everything.
God.
But, it came to a head about a week and a half ago when I actually had to kick my oldest son out of the house because it got to the point where he took advantage of me. And he's always done that. Mm-hmm. But when you get to that point where that moment hits you and you wake up and you go like, holy moly, what have I done?
Oh, Mandy.
No, seriously, I've only always wanted the best for him.
Yeah.
So that was a massive heartbreak. And it's hard to do that, especially your older son. It's hard to let go. And Robin, you know, I've been listening to you all your days to 97.3 and I know your story with your boys and everything. And every time when you talk about your boys, you know, you just pull a heartstring and it's really, really hard to let go.
Mandy, how was that conversation before you booted him out?
Oh, mother, it was heartbreaking. It was a massive argument, and it actually happened just before he left for his cricket game. Mm. We just came to blow, and I said, mate, I want you out of the house tomorrow. That's it. I'm done. I cannot deal with this anymore.
Wow. So is he now, Mandy? What's happened now?
Well, he's with his girlfriend. And he's got a really good mate. And honestly, deep down inside my heart, Robin, I would never, ever have done that if I didn't know he had somewhere to go to. You know, so I knew he would go to his girlfriend, and it's been extremely hard for me. It was heartbreaking. But now he's starting to come good. He's really starting to pull his head out of his ass.
Good one.
There you go. Mandy, you did the hard thing.
And you don't have to score at cricket anymore. That's
right.
The best thing.
Thank you, Mandy. From Warner. Alex, who's the mummy's boy?
Me and my dad.
Oh, your dad. Okay. And how does that manifest itself?
Well, mum and dad still makes us lunch, and like if we got night shift, she'll pack us like a hot meal, like a thermostat.
Man. No.
How old are you, Alex?
18.
Does she make your bed?
Nah.
Oh, good boy.
It mate, never she gets can't made, go in the room. It? She'll die.
Does she clean up your room?
Yeah, sometimes.
Does she? Does she throw stuff out? Because that's what I threaten to do if the rooms are shocking.
Nah, she just puts it all in the cupboard.
Oh. I don't think you're too bad, Alex. What do you do for a job, you and Dad?
I'm a third-generation concrete cutter, and he's a second-generation.
Oh, mate, you're full of dust at the end of the day on that one.
Yeah.
Alex, hey, you are going to find it so hard to find a woman just like your mother to treat you that way. Do you know that?
Yeah, I already have one.
Oh, he's got one. He's got a replacement.
You've got a girlfriend who will do all of those things for you.
Yeah.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Yeah, don't count on that.
Good luck, Alex. Alex. Well done.
Smooth transition. Excellent.
What about Michael? Michael from Deception Bay, is it you who's the mummy's boy?
No, it's not me. It's my brother-in-law and his brother. Yeah. They, 35 and 40, still living at home with their Italian mother.
Oh, okay, they're not married, are they? They're not married. Please don't tell me they're married.
No, not at that stage. They're both married now, but... like she just did absolutely everything for them, you know, just you name it, laid out their clothes on their bed for them and everything.
Jesus. Okay, I need to say this out loud for any of these blokes and all of you guys listening who thinks this is okay. As a woman listening to this, the last thing I would want to do is date some 40-year-old bloke that considers himself a mummy's boy. Probably like, man up, people.
He would have saved a bit of money.
Are they kind of a bit weak?
She'd and be ironing bit... their undies, wouldn't she?
Oh, yeah.
I'm sorry. That is the greatest turn-off as a chick ever. Like, grow up, men. Or boys, as the case may be.
Had a funny situation. I took them fishing once, and the mother came down to sort of watch, and they went down to cast their rods into the water, and she's yelled out, "Bonnie, be careful. Don't go too close to the water."
How old were they when she did that?
Yeah, that was 35 and
40. Oh, my God.
That's fantastic. Put your floaties on if you're going to go there with the floaties on.
So hang on, Michael. So you're saying they're now both married. Is that right?
They're both married, yep.
Who did they find?
That's the interesting one.
Yeah, they found, I don't know, some pretty crazy women, I think, to take them on.
Michael, how do you see them? Like, as a bloke who are related to these 35 and 40-year-old mummy's boys, what do you think about them?
They're wussy as. Like, great. They don't know what a hammer is. They don't know how to use a screwdriver. Right. You know, they're just hopeless.
You and your wife must sit at home just having a cack about them.
Yeah.
It's not something to do, people. No. It's not.
It just happens.
It's not.
Go back to your place or my mum's.
Get away from her, Tony.
It's the new Triple M.
Well, the headline and the story read, "The Panther, a footy fixer, and Miss X's baby." And I thought, what is this all about? And it's about rugby league fixers. They step in and they get all the problems sorted out for all our superstar NRL players. To tell us about the story, if I could introduce Sarah Blake, reporter from the Courier Mail, senior writer from the Courier Mail. Sarah, can you go through it with us? Because we're having trouble getting our heads around the story.
Well, I reckon that's because it's a little bit like a movie, this story. You know, it's pretty shocking. So we've known about this one for a little while, and it was really quite a job to get our girl, Miss X, to talk about it. She wanted to talk about it initially a few months ago, but she's been really quite frightened about what the fallout might be. Mm-hmm. And it really wasn't until, you know, the past couple of days that she thought, you know, that's it, that's enough. I feel like this story should be told. So, yeah, that's where we're at now.
Are we allowed to mention the guy's name, Bryce Cartwright from the Panthers?
Yes, you can mention his name. We're not identifying her because she's asked us not to, and that's really fair enough. It's a pretty personal story, so so that's the decision that we've taken. And I'm not sure if at some point in the future she will be happy to be, you know, on the record talking publicly, but for now she wants to stay anonymous.
Okay, so what is the story as you know it from her?
The story is that Miss X and Bryce had a relationship last year. It was a relationship that she thought was genuine and you know, had prospects. But, you know, it's sort of as old as time itself. She fell pregnant and he was not interested. So they're only 24, 23. They're young. Right.
Yep.
So she didn't feel comfortable at all with the idea of having an abortion. But from the moment that she told him about it, that's exactly what he wanted her to do.
Yep, right.
So it's all pretty torturous. There was a lot of back and forth. It's very, very sad, this story. But the point at which it becomes more than a sad story about a couple of, you know, lovers is where the fixer brought in. And that was sort of, you know, after a couple of months of her having to deal with this. Right. And the fixer is Luz Ivanovic, who is a club fundraiser for the Panthers, a life member of the club and a former player. So very tightly connected.
Right.
And he took over communication with our girl and basically, she says, pressured her, bullied her to the point where she couldn't really, you know, stand the pressure anymore to go ahead with this termination.
Right.
What about the there was a contract drawn up by Luz Ivanovic, and I can remember him playing. He used to play in the second row for the Panthers with Bryce Cartwright's uncle, if I remember correctly. Now, he had a contract drawn up to give her $50,000 if the whole thing could go away, correct?
Yeah, that's exactly right. So the contract is pretty chilling reading. That's probably the thing that jumped out to me at first with this one is when I read that, but I just felt...
What's in it, Sarah?
Well, it's a deed, basically, that acknowledges the relationship in the pregnancy, and then it says quite starkly, you know, that once the settlement sum has been received of $50,000, she will terminate the pregnancy forthwith. So that's what happened. That's what she did. And pretty much as soon as she did it, she regretted it, and she has given the money to charity. So she considers that dirty money. She doesn't want to have anything to do with it, and that's where we're at now. So
Sarah, why didn't she walk away? Why didn't she just walk away and
have the baby
if that's what she wanted to do? This isn't a judgment about her decision. It's a judgment about why she felt the pressure and then succumbed to it.
It's a really good question. It's the basic question of this whole story. And I think what happened from talking to her, we've talked a lot about it. She had always thought she would do it alone. She had always thought that she would be happy to do that. But there was a point where the text messages and the constant assurances from Lou that Bryce would make her life as difficult as possible that her life would be very difficult, that she would have to fight through court, that she wouldn't be able to travel. It was just very, she was scared. She was traumatized. Yeah, so that was why she didn't do it.
This isn't the first time. These fixes get used for a lot of other things to make them go away.
Yeah, yeah. It's awful. It's an awful story. And, you know, the worst thing is that since we've done this, we're hearing whispers that it's really not the first time, which when you look at that business-like contract, you kind of assume that that's the case. It's just, you know. So I guess watch this space on that.
Yes, and the space is Courier Mail. Sarah Blake, senior writer from the Courier Mail with the Bryce Cartwright story. Thanks for your time this morning.
Thanks, guys.
Marto, Ed and Robin, looking for those who got Adele'd over the weekend, positive and negative experiences from Adele's concert at the Gabba.
I was sure you'd have to go, Ed. I knew Marto wouldn't go, but I'm sure that Tiff would want to be in
going to that. Oh. I avoided such a thing. Mitchell from Woolloongabba. Hang on a sec, Mitchell. If you're from Woolloongabba, how far away from the concert were you?
I live in the 20-story building right across from it.
Oh, my God.
Woolloongabba.
What level could you see down on it?
20th. I'm on the top floor.
Oh, so you got a free gig.
Into the Gabba. Two free gigs.
Two free gigs.
Saw both concerts for nothing.
Hey, now, Mitchell, there's an all in Europe there are a lot of teams, like soccer teams and stuff like that, that have apartment blocks that overlook their stadiums. And people that live in these places, I think it happens at Lord's as well, or it used to, they hire out their apartment to people that want to come over and stand on the balcony when there's a game on. Did you think about doing that?
I did. I know that the 17th or 18th floor rented out their apartment. I heard $2,500 going around the block, and they rented out for that much.
Did you invite a few girls over at least?
Oh, of course. I had 30 people on the balcony watching the Adele concert last night.
Oh. What a great place to live, Mitchell. You've brained it there because they're going to start having more concerts there now too.
Exactly. And when the cricket starts up again, that's exactly what I'm aiming for.
And eventually the Lions will win. So it's a
Which was the better gig, Mitchell, Saturday or Sunday night?
Sunday. The crowd was better.
Ooh.
Just hearing the crowd cheering.
Okay.
Oh, there you all go. Right. Thanks, Mitchell. There, so it's a positive experience for Mitchell. There you go, because he lives next to a woman. He lives at the Gabba and he got to see the concert for free. Okay.
Rob of New Farm, tell us, did you get Adele'd and what happened?
Oh, by choice, guys. We went to the Gabba on Saturday night to see Adele, and I've got to tell you, absolutely amazing that that girl can sing.
Mm, she can sing. Where were you sitting, Rob? How close to the stage were you?
We were probably about 25 rows back from the stage. We were actually in the middle of the Gabba, sitting on those plastic chairs that they brought in.
Oh, they were. They had chairs on the field on plastic matting.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, you know, they did it. I think they did it really well. The whole concert at the Gabba was amazing. You know, we're 25 rows back, two rows behind us. There was a bar, so you know, it was a pretty good mix.
There you go. See, a bloke who chose to go to Adele.
Toilets, Rob. The Gabba's not built for female spectators normally. How did the girls cope with toileting?
They were using the guys' toilets.
Good work.
We go to the toilet, go down. The guys are standing in the urinals and the girls are using the cubicles. Excellent. What's wrong with it?
Nice work.
Yeah, nothing wrong with that, mate. Nothing wrong with that.
Missed opportunity. You could have maybe picked up at Adele.
Let's remember, two biggest concerts in the history of Brisbane. No, it wasn't. Some people got Adele'd and, well, they didn't even realise it was on. Is that true, Warren, who lives behind me?
Yes, Greg. Good morning.
Hello, mate. Tell everyone what happened.
I dropped young Tom at Green Slopes. And thought I'd be the tight ass and save the $5 in the tunnel on the way home.
Could have gone through the Clem Jones tunnel, couldn't you? No.
He could have taken all the 4 minutes, but no, he came along Ipswich Road and, more than an hour later, I finally got home. I think I sat outside the Norman Hotel for about half an hour.
And could you hear the concert at least, Warren? Could you hear something going on?
No, not at all. Just lots and lots of girls and their mums walking to the Gabba. did hear it last night, though, but, it took forever to get home Saturday.
Could you hear it last night at our place at Newmarket?
Yeah, mate. Yep.
Right,
I'd come to your place. That would have saved me $300.
No, that's got to be.
You don't want to come there. Greg makes too much noise.
Yeah, I know.
And the thing is, it would have been quite confusing if you didn't really know what was going on, because you'd think, hang on, the Lions aren't playing yet. And why are all these mums and daughters going?
Mm-mm. That's it. Yeah, confused me, but it finally, the penny finally dropped. But it was too late. I couldn't turn around, couldn't do anything.
Well, the way you know it's not a Lions game is that people look happy. They look happy. Gordy, tell us. Morning, Gord. Fizzy's legends and lemons. Gordy, let's start. Who is your legend over the weekend?
I think the legends this weekend were obviously the West Tigers. Being down in Sydney, there was no more talk about any other game, obviously, with the Farah situation last year and the way those young guys went out there and played for their coach, Jason Taylor. I thought, with a fair bit of pressure, all week was about Robbie Farah and it's not about me. When everybody says it's not about me, it always is about them. And I thought the Tigers handled themselves tremendously in conditions that don't normally suit their style of play.
What about your lemons for the weekend, Gordy?
It's out of the same game. I think the medical staff at South Sydney to keep Inglis out there. You know, to have a guy limping and to go there and to do an ACL and now he's out for six months. You don't know whether he re-injured it or not. No one will ever know whether, you know, he was doing more damage every step he took. So I thought, when you've got a bloke like that, and he's a blue-chip player, he's a million-dollar player, in round one, it's not a grand final, Marto, it's not a semi-final. And you want to win every game, but that wasn't, that wasn't a situation where I think Greg had to stay out there.
What are you and the experts all been saying over the weekend? Because that was his good knee. We all know his other knee has been stuffed for the last three seasons, hasn't been able to train properly, and he's the other wrong side of 30. Mate, I've had an ACL. It's hard at that age to come back.
Yeah, look, it is. And the greatest thing for us to look at Greg Inglis over the weekend, it was the first time he'd actually run out that I've watched him run out since he was a kid without strapping on any of his knees. So he was feeling good. He had a great preseason. He was jumping out of his skin. We watched him in the All-Stars game. And then it was just, and Marta, you know when they changed direction with no contact, and that's when it looked really bad, and he sort of limped around. And that's when I would have just, look, and I'm not a doctor.
Get off.
Better people than me to make decisions, but I would have said, come on, Greg, there's bigger fish to fry later on. So
Gordy,
I thought it was a poor decision.
The end.
Gordy, let's talk a little bit about the Titans. The story is that, I think it was revealed on Triple M, Jared Hayne was fined by the Titans for having a bad attitude, but he's gone on Twitter last night saying loose lips sink ships, and that wasn't the case, that he was going to Sydney to get some treatment and there's nothing to see here. What are you hearing out of the Titans? Is there an issue with Jarryd Hayne?
No, I think Jarryd Hayne's been tremendous late in the year, and from my report, especially over at the Nines, that like his attitude has been great. And, you know, Jarryd come back from the NFL, and obviously, you know, it's sort of one play every 4 or 5 minutes to come back in the NRL where, you know, it's every second that you've got to be on the ball. So I heard that towards the end of the year that Jarryd Hayne was buying into the culture and training really hard as one of his best, one of the best trainers. And then over in the Nines, unfortunately, he went up to take a high ball and hurt his knee, and then he missed sort of the last month of it. So Parramatta say that he wasn't ever the best trainer. Anybody that's ever played with Jarryd Hayne says that he's not the best trainer, but I played with Steve Renouf and Alan Langer, and they weren't their best trainers, but they were our best players.
Oh,
so,
hey, you know, nice.
Hey, listen. And Wayne Bennett had a saying, because I'd say, mate, why aren't they training? He goes, there's some players good and you just want them to bring their boots on Sunday. And I think Jarryd Hayne's one of those guys. No matter what they do, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, just bring your boots on Sunday, boys, and we'll see you there.
That's great. Love Gordon Tallis, we'll hear you on the AMs. We'll see you on the Matty John show throughout the week. Good on you, mate.
Yes. Cheers, guys. Thanks a lot.
Marto, Ed and Robin's Best of Brisbane.
Morning. It was massive last week. We're looking for Brisbane's best sporting club. We found them, Valleys Rugby League Club. Well done to them this week. A new category. It started with you, Robin. Something very near and dear to your heart, vanilla slices.
I do love a good vanilla slice. And then I discovered that Marto did too. And so now whenever I'm out and about in bakeries around Brisbane and it's a good vanilla slice, I bring one in for Marto.
Don't overlook pies. It was a time of my life where I ate a pie every day of my life.
Did you?
Well, you could. When I was building every day, you could eat a pie every day and it wouldn't make any difference to your weight.
Do you like bakery stuff, Ed? You're not a big... You haven't been buying in too much to the old vanilla slice debate.
I think I'll leave this one to you two. Aww. And there's plenty of people who will want to getting involved straight away. This is great. John from Sanford, straight away, what is Brisbane's best bakery?
Oh, it has to be the Debra Bakery for sure.
They're pretty good, actually. I've stopped off there when I've been... Yeah, there's a horse riding place that's not too far out of Debra, and I can't remember what it's called. Indeed.
You've got three sons. You need pies. Are pies on the menu?
Oh, the best pies in Brisbane, as far as I'm concerned. Mushroom pies, plain pies, steak pies, and a whole variety. Sausage rolls are really good. Curry sausage rolls. And, of course, the good old egg roll. And then moving into your apple turnovers and, of course, all the other range of things. And that also bread. That bread's very good as well.
Wow. Mm. Righto. You've locked that in. That is definitely nominated. No worries.
Okay, John F. Cooper, give us your best bakery.
Yeah, my best bakery is back.
Turn your radio off, John.
Yeah, John.
John, Sorry. There you go.
Yeah, Barrett's Bakery down at Cleveland.
Yeah, what have they got? What's their specialty?
Well, first of all, they got everything there. The vanilla slice is unbelievable. Lamingtons, all your sponge cakes, the whole lot. Then the pies are amazing. Old school cooking, but the sausage rolls that they die for, they're just amazing.
Looks like I'm going to have to do some research this week. So Barrett's at Cleveland. Righto, mate.
Yeah,
I'll
mate,
see you there.
Next door to Transport Department at 195 Bloomfield.
Yeah, I know where you are, mate. Next to the transport. Yeah, righto.
Yeah, that's excellent.
Can I throw in one down that way as well? Perrott's down at, they've got magnificent pies at Wynnum. I think they're Bay Terrace at Wynnum. I know that's a long way away, but I'm like you. If I'm away from home, I'll go to a bakery.
Well, see, we did Brisbane City. We played Brisbane City on Sunday morning at 8 a.m. And, of course, you've got to drop the kids off for soccer an hour before the game actually starts. Right. What's that one on Ashgrove Avenue?
Oh, yeah. Gerbino's, G-E-R-B-I-N-O's. Yeah, I sometimes go there. They're old Italian, they're traditional Italian bakery. Righto. We're away.
We've kicked it off.
Can we throw all of these down? We'll throw a heap down, and if people vote on them, we'll trim them to 10 in the next 24 hours.
All right, let's get going. It started with vanilla slices. It's expanded out to bakeries.
The nominations are coming thick and fast because it's so, the demand is so high. And we go to Damien from Wavell Heights. Damien, what is the best bakery in Brisbane and why?
Robin and Marto have teenage boys, my boys rate the pies at Carly's Bakehouse at Wavell Heights as the benchmark, and they measure every other pie they eat against there.
Did you say Carty's? And if you did, you mean Hamilton Road?
Yeah, Carly, C-A-R-B-Y.
I did a Renault around there at one stage. not only are their pies, their sausage rolls, and also they make sandwich. Do they make sandwiches still?
They
used to make ham, cheese, tomato.
They make ham on Australia Day. That is just absolutely absurd.
Right, Cardi's is it? Yeah. Hey, Damo.
What's their favourite pie from Cardi's?
Well, I've got two boys. One is a steak, bacon, and cheese, and the other is a steak and bacon.
Stop it. They had a chicken pie there for a while.
Yum, look at that.
I better go and test that.
Yeah, mate, we're going to be spending our whole week driving around bakeries. On Facebook, there's heaps of nominations coming in for flour and chocolate at Morningside. Deborah Bakery is getting a really good go. Natasha says Yeronga Bakery and Cafe, hands down.
Hold on, I've got Mark on the phone. Yeronga, he's saying Yeronga Bakery too. So
there you go. The Bakeologists, Merthyr Road at New Farm, have got a couple of votes as well.
The Bakeologists, of course. We'll do a better run with Stacey. Stacey, if you're Boomba, you've got an old favourite.
I do. I'm actually calling for all of those locals down in the Beenleigh area. I'm going to have to nominate Yetla Pies.
Of course.
It's more known probably for its pies than probably a bakery itself, but I don't know. To be honest, I feel bad. I don't know a heck of a lot about it myself, not being born and bred from the area, but I know the locals that are around that area, they'd vouch for it 100%. I'm pretty sure it's family-owned, been in the area forever and a day, and their pies, oh, my God, they are, if I could swear right now, but they're fucking amazing.
Stacey, as someone who's been here forever, now, we used to take you 2.5 hours to get to the coast, so you'd actually have to break the trip up at Yatla Pies. That's where you'd normally stop and have a pie, and then you continue your long journey to the Gold Coast.
Exactly right. But no, so if we can get them in there, I think they've got to win hands down, by all means.
Okay, fair enough. The thing I would say that I'm also, like, I know Yatla Pies, but I know them for their caramel tarts and apple pies.
I'm the sweet one of the group
and you're going the savoury.
I'll go both.
Taking your nominations all day, Ed Cavalli, 133353 is the number. What is the best bakery in Brisbane? As well, you mentioned Facebook, Robin, heaps coming on there as well. If you just type in Triple M Brisbane on Facebook, you can find it. Like us as well, would
you? Come all day. Like, we're not going to close it off yet. We'll close it off when we get the, well, as many as need be.
Gee, it's delicious.
Isn't it wonderful?
Brisbane's best bakery. What is it? Get your nominations in. It's Marto, Ed and Robin. The new Triple M.
What do you want to talk?
First test, please. Robin, the first test, of course, between Australia and India is absolutely fantastic. It's finely poised. Australia's taken a 40-something or 50-something run lead on the first innings, Robin, which is a very hard thing to do over there. And
Ed, I think you're going to have to go into a bit more detail. If the quiz showed us one thing, it showed that some people don't give us stuff about cricket.
Well, I'm not one of those. I love cricket.
And so did you sit down and watch it all weekend?
No, my beautiful pregnant wife was not keen on that. So
I was
able to watch when she wasn't in the room. I was able to plonk down and watch for a little while.
So you go and plonk, you just lean. What you do is lean, and then when they come by, you're either watching the V8s, the cricket, or the league was on yesterday, you move on, and then you just go around the corner, and then you come back and lean. If you're sitting, it takes too long to get up.
You've done this many, many
times. Just lean on things and have a look, but you can lean for ages.
So you have the TV on the whole time?
Whole time, for God, yeah. Isn't that what happens?
So infuriating.
You never have the TV off.
Standard.
Do you reckon Matt Renshaw is actually 20? He is a 65-year-old accountant in a 20-year-old's body. Why do you say that? Oh, he scored. What did he score? 60 runs off about 200 balls. I mean, hold on, I'll look.
Is that not good?
60 runs. It's
great.
No, it's old school. It's why. You know what? He will never be offered a contract ever to play in the Big Bash.
No.
And that makes me so happy.
Same here.
Why?
Because the Big Bash has nothing to do with cricket.
Oh. Again, you like Matt Renshaw.
I love Test cricket.
Both Ed and I, we're
65-year-old accountants ourselves.
But Robin, your sons were watching, your three boys, they were obviously...
Well, it was on in the background. I'm not a great advocate for just having the television blaring sport all weekend.
Oh, my God.
And they
are. What else is on?
So, life.
What?
outside.
That other stuff.
People. Anyway, they must have taken a little bit of a shine to what was going on in the cricket, because I was having a crack over the dinner table because one of the boys was having a go at his little brother. And he was not saying some very nice things. So I said to him, mate, you can't speak to your brother like that. I'm just not going to put up with it. And he said, well, if it's all right for the Indian cricket team to say it to the Australians, surely it's all right for me. Of which I had absolutely no response, which annoyed me even more.
What happened was that there was a lot of sledging went on. The Indians were giving it to Matt Renshaw and he was just smiling at them. They were making faces at Steve Smith.
A smile and wave, people. Smile and wave.
That's right. You should have told him. Or as I said to you, Offie, you got to just say, look, Sean Marsh doesn't sledge Mitchell Marsh, which he could easily if he wanted to, because... Mitchell Marsh is
great.
A smile works better than a brown eye, always. Like, a brown eye just aggravates people more. They're disarmed. They go, now what am I going
to
do?
To say that to a teenage kid, to let go of that absolute need to, you know, take from verbal to physical and say, just smile at him, ain't not going to work. But thank you.
Head patting.
I think we'll put that on a T-shirt too and start selling it.
Did you see that story with Virat Kohli? I didn't know until the weekend that he went to the Australian... Virat Kohli is the greatest cricketer on the earth. According to the Indians, he probably makes $20 million a year. Would that be correct, everyone?
Sure. He does.
The most famous Indian in India. That's big, huh?
That's big.
He went and he came over to Adelaide. We sponsored him to come to Adelaide and go to our cricket academy many years ago. And Steve O'Keefe, the spinner who took 12 wickets in the last test... They were mates. And Virat Kohli said to Steve Smith, Steve O'Keefe, I haven't got any money. Can you take me around? Because Steve O'Keefe had a car. Drove him around Adelaide trying to find 40% off on ASICS footwear.
I love it.
Isn't that? And
that
now
is my
he's
kind
the
of guy right there. Did they find it? And where was
he's
it?
He's the one who's doing all the sledging. This Indian is now worth $20 million a year. He was getting 40% off ASICS. Should be grateful, the bastard.
Moina. Mano, Ed and Robin.
It's interesting, isn't it? Very interesting. Well, listen, this is something close to my heart. I was supposed to be involved with it, and then I got caught up in rugby on Saturday night. Couldn't help him with the launch. But yesterday at Suncorp Stadium, a former truck driver who's battled melanoma and won, he's taken on perhaps the biggest challenge in his life, even bigger than beating melanoma. And what he's trying to do is walk from Brisbane to Sydney. It started yesterday at Suncorp. Let's say hello to him. Jay Allen, hello, mate.
Yeah, good morning, guys. How you going?
Sorry I couldn't turn up yesterday, mate. I didn't get home back to Brizzy until nearly lunchtime.
You're right, Marto. You're a legend, mate. I appreciate you having me on this morning, mate. Very much appreciated, mate.
So, Jay, tell us about what happened with you and melanoma. When were you diagnosed?
Yeah, look, back in 2007, I had this mole on my left ankle that kept scabbing up and bleeding and itchy and showing all the signs of a melanoma, but I was 32, had no idea. I was thinking maybe it's just a blister. And got diagnosed late December 2007 and ended up finding out it spread up to lymph nodes in my groin. And then all those operations happened around about February, March 2008. So I'm very, very lucky to be alive today, but... You know, that scar I've got from my stomach down a half an MI5 where I had 44 staples, it's a daily reminder that, you know, that I'm still here and get out there and, do as much as I can with this life.
So you're saying to me that this tiny little mole ended up with, 44 staples on your leg?
Well, they've got to take all your lymph nodes out. That's the problem, isn't it? Well, the thing is, you're lucky to be alive. It's the quickest. There's no cancer that kills you quicker from when it's diagnosed. No cancer multiplies quicker. Is that right, Jay? It's been 20 years for me.
Yeah, look, it's the biggest killer between 20 and 39-year-olds in Australia, and it's the most common cancer between 15 and 39-year-olds. And you're right, Marto, once it gets away, a melanoma only needs to get to a millimetre deep and then little cells can break away into lymphatic or your blood system and spread throughout your body. And that's the key. Everyone should be getting regular skin checks to, you know, that if you do get a melanoma, you catch it nice and early before it goes to your lymph nodes because it's a very aggressive cancer.
Jay, you're a truckie. Why are you doing this, mate? You got better. Wasn't it time just to get on with life?
Yeah, look, I guess it was, but I went the other way and I tried to go back to do truck driving and I just had a different mindset. I was thinking if this disease was going to come back and get me, I didn't want to be sitting around in a truck all day driving trucks. So I thought I'll give back and I approached our great chairman at the Melanoma Institute of Australia, Reg Richardson, and I got his business card and I pretty much just harassed him until he gave me a job and he put me on and I've been there for nearly 6-7 years now and I love it.
You left Suncorp Stadium yesterday. How far did you get?
Got yesterday from Brisbane down to Stapleton, 44.8 km, and we're just about to start now. I'm walking from Stapleton down to Burleigh Head. It's about 52 km. A big day. It was pretty tough yesterday, but you know,
What do you got on your feet?
I've got all the ASICS shoes. I've got about 5-6 pairs and compression socks and stuff. got plenty of sunblock, mate, and long sleeve clothing, you know, broad brimmed hat, and protecting myself from the sun at all times.
It's an excellent message, and you can go to the Triple M Facebook page.
Mate.
You can click on the link. Jay Allen walking from Brisbane to Sydney, diagnosed 7 years ago with melanoma, and just a message: everyone go out there. If there's something, oh, that's different colour, or that mole, I don't remember that being there. Make sure you go and you get yourself checked. Jay, thanks so much for telling us your story this morning, mate.
Yeah, thanks very much. And you can also find out more information at our Facebook page, The Longest Melanoma March. And if you see us on the road, give us a bib, you know, and a hoot, you know, might pick up our spirits a little bit more.
We've got a link on our Triple M Facebook page too, mate. So if I'll be donating. Don't worry, mate. Good luck.
Thank you, Marto. And you're a fellow survivor, mate. I really appreciate it. We're brothers for life, mate.
Cheers, Jay. V8 Supercars on the weekend in Adelaide. I think we knew that clips all. We talked about it very briefly on Friday. Now, you see that Shane Van Gisbergen, he won last year, you know, his first ever championship series. So he was a marked man going into his second year syndrome, you know, as the champion. He had
talked
a wonderful
ahead,
weekend.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So top 10 shootout. He won the top 10 shootout both days and won both races.
Yeah.
You'd think ecstatic. When he hopped out of the car yesterday after he won, he hopped on the roof, air punched, and then he went down and did his interview, put his Dunlop cap on, and I thought, wow, I'd never really heard him speak. I thought, wow, now there's a man. He is lightning on the track. He's dynamic, everything he does. And then, unfortunately, Shane Van Gisbergen starts talking.
What a feeling. Awesome weekend. That race was very tough. What an awesome weekend. 300 points. Great way to start the season. Fantastic crowd. Thanks for turning out. Woo!
He's shy.
Is that what it is? That's
what
why I was putting a helmet on and in a car.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think he's one of those sports where you are actually by yourself a lot and you concentrate a lot. And you got to remember, this is the type of guy, what does he do? Remember we spoke to him the other day and we said, what did you do in the off-season? Did you go buy a wakeboarding boat? Did you go crazy? You go to Ibiza? And he said, no, I went to Malaysia to race cars.
He's that kind of lonely guy.
So you know how some people say, I think Rod Laver used to say, tennis, I let my racket do the talking. Don Bradman, yes. I let my bat do the talking. Well, this is the sort of guy, because when I saw him straight after the race, before he actually spoke, he was letting his tyres do the talking. Did you see? We'll probably talk over the top of it.
He is certainly the burnout king.
He was just doing doughies. How much fun are doughies?
Bit of wheel work.
I remember last year they were always told, don't do any doughies, don't do any drift work. You know, we got to save the tyres for next week. That's the first race. He hasn't got any tyres left. It was so much fun. But did you see what happened with, it was only about three or four laps to go, how he won the race? on turn nine, let me get technical here. Yeah. This may upset some people. Scott McLaughlin was winning in the Dick Johnson Racing, Penske in the Ford team. See, now Holden and Ford have always had the last few years, Ford haven't had anything, and Holden have been dominating. They're looking like they're all right again, Ford. With a few laps to go, someone could tell me whether this is possible. Can you bet on V8s? Does anyone know?
I guess you can. You can bet on flies.
I'm making a claim that there may have something happened, something really weird happened. This is a top-line driver who locked his brakes up with a couple of laps to go and allowed Van Gisbergen to win. Is it possible that... Well, have a listen to the commentary.
Big pressure at the moment from Van Gisbergen, who is right on top of him. He covers one width to the inside. He's got the rear locked up, and Van Gisbergen down the inside to the lead.
It was like you were driving. What happened? You go around a corner. A top-line driver does not lock his brakes up when he's winning the race and allow this bloke to come through.
Ed, you're being very quiet. What do you reckon?
I'm talking to the wrong people, aren't I? I forgot you guys don't want to talk V8s.
No, I'm trying to contribute. I'm just involving Ed in case he's got something.
Is it possible after what we saw in rugby league last week where a bloke, I shouldn't make this allegation, because a bloke last week that Tim Simona was betting on people to score against him. Is it possible?
Oh, I see what you're saying.
No, I can't make that accusation.
Could there be some sort of deal and then a bit of a locked break?
No, it must just be bad. It just looked to me, I went, hold on, how can that just have happened?
I see what you mean. I think it's just that in the commentary they said the pressure was too much from Van Gisbergen.
And
he's been forced to lock up his brakes.
I cannot make that accusation that he's deliberately let someone else through.
Can you do me a favour? Hmm. Do not drag the good name of V8s down to the level of rugby league.
Yeah, that's
okay?
a good point.
One is a sport of kings where men sitting on couches with two cartons of beer that they've buried in the ground that they're drinking over a weekend.
And I'm... I'm dragging it down to rugby league level. I'm sorry.
It's the sport of kings, and I won't have it sullied in this place.
Actually, no, I would take all of that. But hold on, we got someone there. Hold on, get someone who actually I can engage with here.
No.
Ben.
Yeah.
What actually happened there? Because I'm not a good judge of all this.
Look, he would have just gotten caught in the mirror. You do that when you're racing. Like, I've done some amateur go-kart stuff. Yeah. I've also worked on 33 last year. I did work experience on Scott McLaughlin's car when they were out to Ipswich.
Yeah.
Wow.
And, you know, you just get caught with the pressure of trying to defend on your position like that. And you just get, you just sort of make a mistake. Instead of concentrating on the apex of the corner that's in front, you get caught looking for the block. You know, he probably didn't block as well as he probably could have, as you would have seen after the race. He was pretty disheartened on himself.
Yeah, he was. Right. So it's better to chase than to be chased, isn't it? It's better to be the person coming from behind.
It can also happen both ways. When you're chasing, you can also make a mistake because there's also the pressure to catch as well. And Shane, let's be honest, he did a really good job of dealing with that pressure. And, you know, just a slight, it wasn't a huge mistake from Scott, but it was just that slight, to give him that chance.
Yeah, Ben, you're now our motor racing correspondent now.
I'll talk to you off air, Ben, from now on. I've bored everyone there.
Intern here on Brisbane's new Triple M.
That was pretty amazing, huh?